All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I hate to break the fishing news up, Ramchuk, but I'd like to speak about the ice hockey.
Congratulations, you're one of the 13 listeners of the Real Life Podcast.
We just traded a migraine in for like an orgasm.
Might want to mark that down, Ramchuk.
Yep. All of my projects are on schedule until they're not.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts.
About as funny as we're going to get today.
Welcome in. Episode 193 of the Real Life Podcast, our first episode in July. It's July 2nd. We got an exciting guest coming up today. Before I get to all that and bring in the boys, I should let you know, as always, our podcast sponsored by the fine folks at Japa Machinery. Their fleet is ready for rental season. If you're looking for daily, weekly, monthly earth-moving equipment rentals, Japa has you covered. Japa's fleet includes excavators, wheel loaders, compaction, and asphalt equipment. All machines are newer, cleaned, maintained, and supported by Japa's top-notch service. They are local. We love them. They are proud to be not only Canadian, but Albertan. Speaking of being Canadian, it was Canada Day yesterday, and I bring in Jay and Bagged Milk. Jay, what'd you get up to on Canada Day? Anything special?
Well, the forecast kind of led me to have yesterday be a working day, so I was working. And then I saw the skies part at about 3 p.m., and I got a text saying, do I want to golf? So I dropped everything I was doing, and I rocked out for a 4:15 tee time, and went golfing.
Who just joined the call right now?
That's a Wanye drop-in.
Oh, yeah, Wanye drop-in. We're already recording. We're already rolling, Wanye.
I knew we were, son. I knew we were.
As you guys know, I'm a big fan of the random drop-in from members of this podcast. Wanye, what are you up to?
Well, I'm on a podcast right now. What are you doing?
Same thing. Yeah, same thing.
Go on. Carry on.
Before we get into Hub City discussion and all that good stuff, should let everyone know that we're going to be joined in about 20 minutes by Chris Seger. He's from the local Edmonton band Striker, and they're fresh off a Juno win. We're going to chat to him a little bit about the band, what they're doing right now. They got a album they released in 2020, Alive in the Studio. I believe that was their sixth studio album as well. He's also a big Oilers fan, as you probably would have guessed. He rocks Nation gear in the band's videos, all the good stuff. We'll talk to him about music, life, hockey, that kind of stuff. But until then, some big news from the NHL. Edmonton officially selected as a hub city, And Wanye, since you just joined the pod, I'll come to you first on this one. What's your take on Edmonton getting NHL hockey?
Welly, welly, welly. Nobody wanted to come to smelly old Edmonton to play hockey during pandemic and look at the last lady at the desk. It's us. Ha!
It really,
sweet revenge.
It really does feel a little bit like win by default, though, doesn't it?
Well, default in that we have the lowest COVID rates of any NHL market.
Yeah, but it just feels like they wanted so hard to go everywhere but Edmonton. Then at the end, Edmonton was still standing there, kind of like you said, last girl to dance, being like, well are you really not?
Maybe we need to realize what an amazing city we live in. Maybe we need to thank our lucky stars we don't live in New York or Las Vegas for once and be like, hey, look, not only do we have Connor McDavid, the entire Western Conference is playing here. Now, granted, we can't go see them, but we know they're here.
Well, and also the thing that always was interesting to me was this ever about the safety of the players or where they wanted to be? Because Edmonton was always going to be the clear runaway winner of safety for the players. So it didn't make sense to me, any of the other shenanigans, until all of a sudden Vegas is just like, oh yeah, we basically got the same amount of cases of all of Canada in one day, so we should probably bow out.
I think it's a hindsight thing. They're like, yes, of course we did this in the name of safety, but they were really trying to push Vegas as far as they could to the end zone until they realized that it's a ticking time bomb down there.
Yeah, I think that's right, too. And you know what? Credit to the NHL, because last podcast, I kind of ripped them for exactly what you just said, not prioritizing safety. It seemed like they cared about money, the TV networks, trying to make the players happy for whatever reason. And whether they meant to do this intentionally or not, they waited until the 11th hour, a clear final two, in my opinion, because I don't think there's anywhere really better to go than Edmonton and Toronto from a perspective of two different time zones. The big media hub in Toronto will make life easy for Sportsnet, and the low COVID cases in both cities as well. I know Toronto's a little bit higher, but compared to Nevada or Florida or anywhere else like that, they're doing all right. So it's exciting. The one thing I have with this, and it's switching gears a bit, but I keep seeing people, and there's a piece in the Edmonton Journal today being like, oh, Oilers fans in Edmonton need to rally around this. But my question to you guys is how? Like, because we don't want like crowds outside of Terwilliger Rec Center screaming at Nathan MacKinnon and Connor McDavid. We don't want people like breaking into the golf course to go like get autographs from these guys. So is there really anything for Edmonton to do now from the common folk, from a fan on the street like us? Like, is there anything we can do to quote unquote rally around this?
Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go into my kitchen and turn my light on and off a whole bunch of times and turn my sink on and off. And that's how I'm going to set. That's how I'm rallying.
I've been yelling out my window at everybody that walks by.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because I don't leave my house, you Remchuk.
Neither do I, man.
I leave my house. So I'll be at a friend's patio or I'll be at a bar patio at a socially distant table. Supporting local wherever I can, whether it be a local liquor store or ordering Oodle Noodle on Skip the Dishes or crushing Nation Beer at the Pint, I will be trying to find ways to support.
So is that kind of everyone's play here for when they come back? Is it going to be going to bars and watching it with people, or are you still at the point of, like, Jay, I know you just said yours, but Bagged Milk and Wanye, are you guys going to be hitting up bars and getting after it here when things eventually resume in Edmonton, or is it going to be sitting on your own couch with Nation Beer you bought at a liquor store?
Bag Milk, you first.
I mean, it really depends. We'll cross that bridge when we get there kind of person. I've said on this podcast before that I wasn't planning on going anywhere until at least the end of June, and now we're into July, and do I plan on going anywhere? Not really. But if we can do so safely, if we can go to a patio somewhere and sit there together at a safe distance or whatever, then I'm open to that. But I could also see a situation where me and Frank are cuddled up with 1,000 empty Nation beer cans amongst us, mostly by me because he's not old enough to drink, and I do it at my house. We'll see. I have no idea.
But everyone's going to have their own definition and version of it, right? It could be, you know, you go to, your neighbor's patio and watch it outside and order takeout and, you know, crush beers and do that. Like, the support's going to look different, but there's going to be, like, we're all, like, this is playoffs, baby, so it's in our DNA to do something, and everyone's just going to have a different iteration of what that is.
So from a OilersNation.com perspective, what's the plan here to get this city and get the fan base ready for the playoffs? Are we pumping out car flags again right away? Are we getting new Nation beer designs? What's what do we kind of have going?
Well, we ordered car flags in January for the start of the April playoffs, so we're ready for that. Yeah, we'll be going in full playoff mode. We'll be getting our orange going. We got some t-shirts, some flags. We do have a playoff can design in the works. So we'll have that all themed up and ready to go. And, you know, maybe, you know, case count and Hinshaw permitting might do a, you know, small group event. You know, we'll do whatever we can to bring the community together, based with the rules of that time, or we'll just all yell at each other on social media, and that's fine too. But we will be doing something. It is on us. It is the onus of the Nation and of Nation citizens to interact with one another during such a peak time in our lives, which is playoffs.
Yeah, like when I see Edmonton's going to be the hub, and again, we've talked about this before, I start getting excited again because I'm like, hey, we are now like a month away from this shit getting going, and it's getting close, and I'm excited to watch playoff hockey and all that stuff. But is there, like, for you guys, is it excitement at 100 right now, or are you still maybe being cautiously optimistic? Like, for you, Wanya, like, are you stoked to watch the Oilers in the playoffs, or are you still like, this might fall apart really quick and be a little awkward?
Well, here's what I think. What would it be like if the entire Western Conference came to Edmonton during the flu pandemic for playoffs? Okay. They're basically running games around the clock at Rogers. Right. But you're not allowed to go. Are the Oilers in the playoffs? Yeah. In fact, they're probably going to do really well. What would be more Oilers than winning on home ice in front of no fans? Some motherfucker is going to be skating around raising the Stanley Cup to an empty building. This is going to be the strangest thing ever. And I could see it being in Edmonton and Connor being like 1.2 kilometers from Wanya Manor skating around on the ice, and I can't go. And then we're going to be faced with the hardest decision of our lives. Sophie's choice. Do you go to the Edmonton Oilers Stanley Cup parade, which will immediately be declared illegal? Because that, to me, would be the hardest parade not to attend in a pandemic, would be the Oilers 2020 Cup parade after they just whooped the entire league in Edmonton and you couldn't go to the game. I swear to God, I would try and pitch the Oilers on letting me quarantine inside the arena, and I will legitimately live there for 3 months in an RV I'd bring in.
So,
and just be like, I'll be the only fan. I'll go to every game.
So the NHL sent out a memo to its off-ice officials, you know, because there's a large staff. You know, you have penalty box attendants, obviously, but then you need your concussion spotters, you need your statisticians, all that stuff. And they sent a note out to the ones that work in Edmonton and basically said, if you guys want to do this, you have to live in the bubble. So that's going to be something really interesting as well. Like, there are going to be fragments of people in there keeping stats, doing all that shit. The question
I attend on behalf of Section 203 and just go by myself to every single game and sit in the middle of the section and cheer and swear with a mic on me? That'd be valuable content.
Well, what's going to be interesting to me, I wonder if they're going to open up press row. Like, because there is like an entrance you can get to there. Like, you could make it so that the press box could have reporters and whatever, the broadcast teams, and they would never have to go anywhere but basically from the street to an elevator and then straight up. So I wonder what's going to happen with things like that as well, because I'm not going
to lie. You got to think they would, right? Because they're going to need to have maybe not like microphones where you're doing press conferences. Those might be stationary. But you'd think they'd want to have as many media as they could. And for the exact reasons you said, if you're in the media box and all the players are on the ice, there's so much cubic feet of space inside Rogers Place.
Yeah.
It wouldn't pose much risk as long as you can get in and out safely.
Yeah, I even think about like the drink rail around the lower bowl, and like if they wanted to let media in there, you just do, hey, one or two media members, and then 6 feet of space, one or two, 6 feet of space, and
like,
that kind of thing all the way around.
Wouldn't you think that the sports media of hockey is going to divide itself and come to Edmonton and Toronto and live in the bubble too? Like, that's what I would think is going to happen. I bet there's like 400 media people at the games, no?
No, I think it'll be, if it's in Edmonton, it'll be a large handful of the local guys that do it, and maybe a small fragment of traveling media, because I think all the post-game press conferences are going to be done on Zoom. I think there's going to be a lot of guys who really don't want to leave their families in the middle of a pandemic when they could just watch the games on TV and do their reporting there. But I wonder if
they'll the Oilers are going to win the cup, eh? Like, this is so bizarre that all these losers are going to point to us forever and be like, oh, yeah, you might have won the cup, but it was the year where no one got to go and blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's what
this is going to fucking happen. I can feel the weirdness killed in my favor.
Like, I know, it's weird. It's like magic pixie dust of weirdness. But
you know,
Coombs
bullshit.
Much.
Yeah, Coombs bullshit scenarios always of like, if you could have Kobe Bryant, but Vince Carter never existed or whatever bullshit it is. Would you want the Oilers to win the cup on home ice because they can't go on the road? But you're not allowed to watch any of the cup run in person.
Yes,
absolutely.
You need multiple cup wins to be a dynasty. So it's okay to get one, to get the COVID cup. Yeah. And then
the COVID cup.
Because you're building your body of work. So it's
we should
okay.
make math. Let's say the COVID cup 2020 and give them away and not make a penny off of it because that's ghoulish.
I'll tell you one thing. I saw today the Edmonton Oilers tweeted out a video of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins back on the ice at Rogers Place, and I got real excited.
Mm.
I don't care if there's no fans there. I don't care if everybody says that there needs to be an asterisk side discount. I don't care. If Connor's parading around the ice with an empty building, but him and the boys get to drink out of that baby and they get to celebrate, that's all that matters to me.
Could you quarantine into the arena and live in an RV for 90 days?
Yeah.
Oh, easy. Absolutely. 100%.
I think I could too. I actually don't even think it would be that much of an impact on my life as long as I had a couch.
I don't think it would be much
the
different.
Wi-Fi is good.
Yeah, I don't think it would be much different from the way I'm living now. So whatever. Like, let's do it. I'm down to live in an RV.
We could race ghost carts around the concourse.
Absolutely.
We should tell the Oilers we want one section for the entire thing and we'll give them a giant chunk of money, but we're allowed to blog.
Yeah. Yeah, I also love that we're talking about the media and them not allowed in the building. A bunch of them that won't be allowed in the building. And I'm like, ha ha, you're all bloggers now, suckers.
Yeah, ha, you're an idiot. All we had to do was seal ourselves in here because we don't have family.
The part for me, like watching it on TV, there's obviously going to have to be like security guards and stuff. So will the camera be like panning across the ice? Then you'll randomly see like one person wearing a red Rogers Place security jacket, like standing in section 101, like, what if that guy cheers when the Oilers score? Is there a way to build in some sort of home ice advantage that way?
I would legitimately CGI in fans. Like in a video game. Like go to EA Sports and be like, the fans of the video game, I want them on my live shot. You know they make that big ketchup bottle appear behind the net?
Yeah.
Mm.
We need fans like that.
Did you
would pay $100 to have Cardboard Jay sitting in the stand. So when Connor hosts the cup, Cardboard Jay was there to witness it.
Okay, what about this? Hold on. What about this? We set up like monster, like remote control cars with like a fucking GoPro on top, and you're allowed to drive your like avatar into Rogers Place, go up to your seat, and sit in your chair as like a fucking drone or something, and you're allowed to be in the building, but just as an avatar.
That's what I'm talking about, man. Like all these soccer teams over in Europe, they're letting cardboard fans fill up the seats. Let's do that here. Maybe like we can put them on some kind of like Home Alone style train track type thing where there's a little bit of movement, got them bouncing up and down, a little bit of robots. You know what I mean? Let's get them in there. Let's do something weird. I'd pay $100 for bag milk. Sit there, just a giant bag of milk sitting in a chair. Absolutely.
Your avatar.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys hear what the Baltimore Orioles are doing? No? Okay. They're doing the cardboard cutout thing.
Oh, you guys are big Baltimore Orioles fans? Oh, you know, like Cal Ripken's legacy? Oh, my God.
So they're doing the cardboard cutout thing, but they also have a package where you can pay for your cardboard cutout. And if your cutout gets hit by a foul ball or a home run, they will send you the ball.
Hold on. They're actually doing cardboard cutout fans.
Yeah. And if you get hit by a ball, you get it. So maybe we can do that in hockey too. Like a player's helmet flies over the boards and hits your cutout. And it's just like, hey, we're sending you the helmet.
I still want to know what they're going to do in terms of the players on the ice, because the NBA said they're going to put the games on tape delay to stop naughty language from coming through on the old TV. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what the NHL is going
to
do.
Yeah, they'd have to do the same thing because you don't want the gamesmanship of trash talking is part of sports. And
what if they played music? What if they just played music like the NBA does, or what the whatever yeah. league it is? Play yeah. music during play.
I'd like to hear DaBaby on CBC.
Dope.
I
you're
still...
M-Chuck, you're the purist.
No.
Every single part of the game is ruined. Can we play music while we're playing?
No, I don't think you can do music. I think the answer
is... That's where
is...
he draws the line, guys. That's where we draw the line. Purity in a game.
I think that do it the way some soccer leagues have done, where, like you said, they partnered with FIFA and EA Sports, and they just pump in crowd noise, and they use that technology to get the crowd going. And when there's a scoring chance, the crowd will get a little bit louder. When there's a power play, the crowd will get a little bit louder and all that stuff. Like, I think you just need to do that. It'll drown out the swearing. The issue with running it on a tape delay is, one, you cannot have any media in there, or the media that's in there, you have to have them sworn to, like, if we're running a 20-second tape delay, no tweeting during the game. Because you can be like, huge bucket by LeBron, or like, massive goal by McDavid, I can't believe it. And me sitting at home on Twitter is like, what the fuck? They haven't dropped the puck from this face-off yet. What do you mean? What's
going on? And yet LeBron
right?
is scoring?
Well, oh, interleague, that's what we should do. Bring in LeBron to heaven.
Yes. Yes.
He's a dominant player, I bet.
Do you think all of the Western Conference will permanently play in Edmonton forever?
What?
Exactly. Exactly.
What if it goes so well?
Here's what you do. You hire all the out-of-work Cirque du Soleil acrobats to swing from the rafters of Rogers in each mm-hmm. stand. So it's just a shitload of people swinging back and forth like a Coco Bongo jig.
Or the Edmonton Oilers buy 18,000 headsets that they give away to fans. And from our houses, as a collective, we're all able to cheer and scream. And since everybody will be talking at the same time, it'll just sound like the dull roar of a crowd.
I will run a delivery app which allows you to pee in a bag, and I will dump it in the bathrooms at intermission.
See? Now we're using our heads to the point.
$5 a trip.
Can you imagine if they did that headset thing, but it was like horribly delayed, like 6 seconds off? So a player scores, and then it's just like silent, silent, silent. Then as they start skating back to the bench, it's like, oh.
Don't you think as a player it'd be less creepy to have music than dead silence in the arena?
I would think so.
I would think so.
No, I think they'd get so into the game if you know it's playoff hockey.
They wouldn't even hear the music.
Yeah, I think they'd just be so into it, and it's just.
I don't know, man.
But
think about somebody raising a cup to an empty building, and like one guy up in the rafters being like, "Yeah."
You just got DJ Tyco up in his normal booth, just being like, "Make some noise!" And there's just nothing going on. I love that. Let's do it.
I will pay any amount of money to quarantine in.
Yes.
I would also love to spend Jay and Wanya's money. Let's go.
Yeah, I don't think that's
this has to be one person per section. How many sections are there in the arena? Like 45?
Sure. Somewhere on there, yeah.
45 fan packs. 45 fans are allowed to watch the game. You're not allowed to leave your section the entire game. I'd do it.
And mm-hmm. you can only eat Rogers Place concession. So it's like Bobby Nick's Burgers, the weird sushi you can get at that one stand. And beer, and that's all you can have.
And there's nobody to clean your seat. So by the end of the run, over in my section, there's just like 1,400 empty beer containers. And I've got like a bathrobe on, and I haven't left the arena in weeks. And I've watched like 75 playoff games.
It would kind of remind me in a way. So in the 2017 run, I was lucky enough to be in a box. And in a box, you got to sit there. The server came in. She said, just so you guys know, you guys can hang out in here for 2 hours after the game is over. So my brother-in-law and I hung out in the box drinking beers, probably another 90 minutes. And it was weird to be in there when there's absolutely no one else in there. So I love the idea of Wanya sitting in section two, whatever, ooh, with just dozens of empty cups surrounding him and his Jordan Eberle, you know, nightgown or whatever.
And we'll have rigged up some sort of single bed cot that like rests on top of the chair back so you can sleep in your section, right? Yep. And you have like a little privacy tent. And you got bathrooms, so that's not a problem.
Yeah.
And then you're like, good night, 206, and then Jay or 160, you're like, see you later, man. All right, see you for 14 games tomorrow.
Even with just 45 people in the building, there'll still be lineups in the bathroom, eh?
No.
Oh,
the 50-50 tonight is $8 again.
Fuck,
I win again?
That. Now, that's one thing. They're going to need to move the 50-50 online, I think.
I think that's a priority.
Because then everyone's going to play 50. Well, you make a shitlot of money for charity. Charities need money. there needs to be many, many, many priorities, but one of them we should think about 50-50 online. There are companies that do it.
And it already exists. Yeah. That'd be so easy.
There's teams that actually do that.
I bet that was the tipping point for Edmonton as a hub city. It wasn't our COVID numbers. No, no. It was Edmonton's passion for the 50-50.
Hell yeah.
It actually is one of those things.
That'll single-handedly drive up the salary cap.
It honestly would get to that point. It's so weird how Western Canada, or I should, not Western Canada, the Prairie provinces go fucking bananas for 50-50. You can go to a Leafs game on a Saturday night. It's like 30,000. When I was in LA, I went to a Kings game on a Friday night, and the 50-50 was whatever, like $8,000. And you come here, it's a Tuesday against Arizona. You look at the screen and you're like, how is this at $75,000? It's absolutely insane.
It's our thing, man.
Yeah.
The 50-50s are part of our culture.
They call to us.
It's time to bring in our guest for the week. So we're going to stop down for a brief second here. For those listening at home, you can enjoy a quick little sample of the musical stylings of Stryker. We'll be back in a couple of seconds with Chris Seger from the band. All right, back on the Real Life Podcast, we got another musical guest this week. It's kind of becoming our thing now. Brett Kissel last week, and this week is Chris Seger. He's from an Edmonton band, Stryker. And Chris, the first thing I want to get to with all this, you're fresh off a Juno win. How'd it feel?
Oh, man, it felt awesome. I'm just kind of overwhelmed with gratitude and still hung over from the celebration.
in the times of COVID, what were you guys like doing when you've, because it was a pre-recorded show. So like, how did that kind of work from your guys' perspective? What did you do to kind of, for the lead up and to celebrate and all that?
Well, it came up pretty quick. Like they were supposed to be in Saskatoon this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all had our, families and everyone kind of getting excited to come down. And then it was just a couple of weeks ago that they announced what they were going to be doing. So there wasn't that much lead up. It was just kind of, you know, how are we going to get together in this? Are we allowed to get together for this? And so we just kind of got together for a barbecue, watched it on TV, and that was that.
And then obviously, like you said, a big celebration afterwards.
Yes. Yeah. Most of that was last night.
So what did you guys get to do to celebrate? Were you all together or did you have to do it via like a Zoom call or something?
No, we got together. Like we're a pretty tight knit group. A couple of us work together, and we sort of see each other on a regular basis. So I mean, we kept it safe. We weren't, you know, sharing chip bowls or whatever. But we did get together and do a little celebrating.
So the people at PricewaterhouseCoopers didn't text you like 20 minutes before the ceremony, like get ready for your speech, wink.
No, we weren't pre-informed about winning. So we've
did
got,
you make a speech? Did you get to say anything?
We've got a few days, actually. They want it on the 5th or the 6th, so we haven't done it yet. But
oh, I see.
Who in the band is in charge of writing the speech?
I think we'll give it to Dan, our singer. It's sort of a singer thing to do.
Yeah. That's so singer.
you guys got an album out in 2020, Alive in the Studio. Take us through that album a little bit. What makes it, you know, maybe unique to the other albums you guys have released?
Well, I mean, it was really good for us because we had this idea, like we had a bunch of tours planned for this year. We were going to be doing festivals right now in Europe, and we had another tour that we had to cancel before we announced it. And to promote that, we went into a studio here in Edmonton and basically recorded, I think we did 12 songs off of our last three albums. And it was just supposed to be like promo for the tour to push it, but it ended up with COVID and everything, like the greatest thing to kind of have in your pocket to be able to release, you know, these tracks kind of week by week after that. So it worked out really good.
That sucks. You're not able to go to Europe touring. Do you like life on the road, or does it kind of look the same after a while?
Both. I like it, and it starts to look the same. I find the more places you go, the more similar everything is. Like in the end, the people. I mean, we've toured mostly in just like the Western world. I guess we've been through. We've played in most of the states. We've played all over Europe and in different places. And like the scenery changes, and you see really cool stuff. But the more you do it, the more it's the same.
but in a good way. If that
we all
sense.
Drink Sprite, right?
That's right.
Everybody loves Sprite. Where were you? What festivals were you going to be playing this summer?
We were supposed to be playing. Well, actually, there's a couple that didn't get announced yet that I don't think I'm supposed to announce yet because they haven't re-announced them for next year. But there was one called Summer Breeze Festival, which would have been one of the bigger ones in Germany. I think it's about a 40,000.
Where about in
Germany? I want to say it's near Stuttgart.
Sick.
Yeah.
Can't do that. 20,000 people now? Imagine that. They freak out.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't know what that's going to be when that reopens, what that's going to look like.
Do you know off the top of your head how many countries you've played in?
I think I read, it's funny, I read in a CBC article today that it's been 21.
21. Is there one, like I know you guys are talking on your Facebook page, you're going back to Spain. Is there one that kind of stands out that you sort of really look forward to when you're going through the tour?
Yeah. Where you go to food for the first time is always, because you're kind of experiencing it for the first time. So I've got these different memories from, you know, different tours and stuff, but I would say Germany is always a highlight. Just the people there are nuts. The crowds always seem to be a little bit bigger. And the States. We didn't start touring in the States until quite a bit later than we started doing all of our European tours, and going to the States is awesome. Just seeing all the places down there for the first time is great.
That would be my...
We're
all excited here, boys.
Everybody get a question. Everyone get a line.
Let's go.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bag Milk.
That was going to be my question. Is there a major difference between a metal fan from, say, Canada and the U.S. and then when you go over to Germany? Are we all kind of still in the pit? We all doing the circles. We all moshing and we all get crowd surfing. Is it kind of the same or is there a difference?
No, it's pretty similar, I guess. Well, it's similar and it's different because, I mean, even like the States is so big that you'll have a totally different kind of crowd in like Austin, Texas than you had in Dallas. Or like, so I mean, there's kind of differences city to city, but I would say in general, it's pretty similar. Like there's a few more, you know, guys wearing jean vests with patches on them in Germany than maybe there are in the States and stuff, but it's, I don't know, the world's pretty small. I think the internet kind of shrunk everyone into being really similar.
Well, I don't know if you've been to Scandinavia yet, but those cats love metal, but they all are prim and proper, like well-dressed individuals that'll then just put their earphones in and blast metal. So for me, it's such a weird, interesting dynamic to see that metal's got such a huge part of their culture.
Yeah, that's true for sure. We have played over there a bit. We recorded one of our albums in Sweden in 2013 or 2014 and spent a month there too.
Oh, rad. Sick.
One of the things we like to do when we have, you know, whether it's athletes, musicians, we've got an actor on as well, we like to talk about, it's about the come up, right? And kind of how you got to be where you are now. So when you were growing up, like, when did music start to become like a major point of your life? What was kind of your introduction into that?
You know what? It was pretty early. Like, I come from a family of musicians. Both my parents have their doctorate degrees in music. Oh, wow. And teach, or just wow. Retired, but you know, spent their careers teaching universities and touring all over the world. My brother's a jazz drummer, you know, got his master's at U of T. He's getting his PhD at U of A right now. My wife's a violinist, has her master's, plays in the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra.
What on earth? Do they genre shame you ever? Are you like, I now have a Juno, motherfucker. It's time I get some respect around this house of classically trained musicians.
That's right. Yeah, no, I joke about it all the time. I'm the least educated in the music world, that's for sure. But
and can they get down with the scene? Are they like, oh, yes, that's what he does. The band's very lovely. Like, how are your parents?
Oh, they love it. They're so supportive. They and like growing up took me to, you know, all these different things. Like in grade 10, I was a huge Iron Maiden fan and thought, you know, they'd never come to Edmonton. I'll never be able to see Iron Maiden. And it was on their Dance of Death tour in whatever year that would have been, 2003. And my dad bought us tickets to go and see him in New York. We flew out and had, you know, they took me to shows. My mom did the same for some concerts once before, and they're unbelievably supportive.
I respect that they didn't like Serena and Venus Williams dad you into becoming a different type of musician.
No, they, I mean, they had me playing piano as a kid, and then they let me quit when I hated it, which of course now I regret, like everyone says you will, but.
Why? You're a Juno winning musician. What do you mean? What do you mean?
And guitar, man. You can wail on the guitar.
Yeah, oh, thank you very much.
That's what I was going to ask. So you played a little bit of piano. In that environment, did you dabble in a bunch of different instruments, or was it always the guitar for you?
It was pretty much just the guitar. Yeah, like I guess that's not true. I mean, you know, junior high band and that kind of stuff. I was playing the trombone and the tuba and some other stuff. I didn't keep up, but I did play a few things over the years. And bass guitar I played in bands growing up. So I guess I lied. I played lots of instruments growing up.
So looking back, like, is there a guitarist that you looked at when you were a kid? You were like, I want to play like him.
Yeah, more. Well, yeah, there's a couple. I would say Adrian Smith from Iron Maiden was always one of my biggest influences. I don't know if you guys are like big metal fans or if you knew, you know, any of that stuff growing up, but there's this intro to the Rock and Rio DVD that they did in 2000, and he kind of steps out on the stage and just goes into this power stance that was just ingrained in my, you know, mind my whole life. Ever since I saw it, that's what I wanted to do.
Hold up, one second.
Who the hell?
Jay.
Who's dinging?
Jay. Every time,
Jay.
We're
in the middle of a podcast. Mute your phone.
There is a mute button on the bottom bar, Jay.
He just
effects
wanted Juno.
And mute.
Mute your phone.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
And now
okay,
there's an
I took
echo.
The opportunity to mute mine.
Yeah, now it's echoing, and that's all weird. I apologize on behalf of everybody. We've virtually embarrassed ourselves.
Anyways, you were talking about Iron Maiden, Adrian Smith as well, and he comes out in that power stance. So for a kid like that, that must have just been like hard eyes emoji. Like, damn, I want to do that one day.
Yep. Oh yeah, totally. That was the if I could narrow it down to a moment, it was watching that for the first time and just kind of seeing him come out and then wanting to do that.
As a group, as a band, do you guys, is there any of those past groups that you guys kind of feel an influence from or that you kind of, I don't know if style yourselves after is the right term, but are there some groups that maybe you think you maybe resemble from the past, like some historic groups?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends how, how deep you want to dive into it. I would say to the most, to most people, they would see us in that sort of Iron Maiden or Judas Priest kind of, world. Our singer who writes the majority of the music is his influences are all over the place. He loves all kinds of 80s speed metal bands that most people have never heard of to he's a big hardcore music fan, even listens to a bunch of rap and there's lots of different influences that kind of sneak their way in, but I'd say most people kind of compare us to an Iron Maiden, that kind of sound.
And the thing about metal too is it's always a lifelong passion, right? For people, it's not like you're into metal maybe when you're a kid and then you grow kind of out of it. Metal is one of those things where it's just, that's what you do. That's who you are. Last time I went to a concert, I got to see Iron Maiden when they were here a while ago. And just looking around the crowd, it's so diverse, right?
It is totally, yeah.
Is that one of the coolest parts about it as you guys have your stars kind of shot up that you see just different ages and different groups of people at your shows?
Yeah, totally. It's actually interesting. We'll have, people who are in their mid-60s coming to shows, and we'll have kids who are, under 18 standing outside the door because they want to meet us, but they can't watch the show and everything in between. It's a huge variety of just different ages, different people. It's really cool.
Speaking of your live shows, I mean, I was talking to a guy at my work today when I said I was going to be interviewing you, and the first thing he said, he's like, man, have you seen them live? And no, unfortunately I haven't, but he was like, man, those guys go fucking hard. How important of an emphasis is that for you guys to make sure that your live shows are memorable for everyone there?
That's a huge focus for us. We rehearse a lot and we try to, we want to bring a lot of energy. No matter where we play, it's always a goal for us to get that room going, whether it's, we've played venues to 10 people over the years to, packed, sold out venues. And we just we want to bring the same energy to every show. We sweat buckets when we're up there.
I watched some of your performances before getting ready. And honestly, on top of being good musicians, you're almost layering in an athletic performance on top of playing. a lot of bands, some guys are just sort of sitting there tapping their toes, and you guys saying sweating buckets. It looked like you're playing a full on professional sport.
Yeah, we do that. It's a goal. I mean, we also just want to have fun. We want to do each other every night. You want to push the other guys on stage. Do silly stuff, run around. Bump into each other a little bit. That's all part of just having fun.
when you were playing down in Texas, did you ever play any smoking hot outdoor shows? And you're like, why do we do this? Why?
Oh, 100%. We did. We had the stretch of shows last year in July, and it started in Las Vegas, and it was like 10 days through the whole like desert. And I remember we pulled into El Paso. I don't know if anyone's ever been there, but it's like you're basically just looking across the river into Mexico. Into like Juarez, which used to be like the world's most dangerous city, but it's the coolest drive to do and kind of see it. But we got to the venue and it was exactly that. We showed up and we're like, oh man, like imagine if we had to play on that outdoor stage. Like I'm so glad it's going to be inside. And then we went inside and it was just like, you know, a cafe with no stage, and that was the stage outside.
Oh,
and I think it was 10 straight days where the high was at least 45.
Oh. That sounds terrible.
And you're like, you're only allowed to wear black. You have to have long hair. Like,
yeah.
No.
But I felt way worse for the openers because the sun was down for us. But some of the other bands that had to play before were just getting cooked.
I want to float this question to you. We asked it of Brett Kissel last week as well. But when you're on the stage, when you think of the energy you're trying to bring, and then you look at the Oilers roster, your on-stage performance, who do you think you most resemble on the Oilers?
Oh, man. Probably Zach Kassian.
Love it.
Oh, on a part, you know, I've got the matching haircut. But I think just that energy. Like I've had so many moments when, you know, when he scores that goal and he's yelling at the fan through the glass from the playoffs. Yeah. And
isn't that a great shot?
Oh, yeah.
Such an iconic moment.
And I've had a few where I've caught myself or I've seen pictures where I just start yelling, basically trying to get the energy going up, and it'll be that same thing. You've got these guys right in front of you, arms up, screaming, and I'd say probably Kassian.
Is he your favorite Oiler?
Oh man, that's a tough call. I think my favorite Oiler is Draisaitl.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. And so you don't go Connor just because you can't go Connor because everyone loves Bryce? Is that why?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's too hard, man. They're just both so good. I go with Draisaitl because I've got the German descent in my roots, so I pick him.
We were talking earlier on before you came on about how like you're a hardcore Oilers fan, so you're among your friends here, and we all know that fucking stuff up is so Oilers, right? And the weirder it gets, it's so Oilers. Can you imagine the entire Western Conference playdown in Rogers? We're not allowed to go to any games. The Oilers win the cup on home ice, and we're not allowed to go, and we're not allowed to go to the cup parade we've all been talking about for the last 15 years. The Oilers might win the cup this year. What do you think?
Oh, man, it's so crazy. Like, I think you just have to take the grateful that there's going to be hockey, and if we get that far, you know, I'm glad that's going to be something I have to worry about. Not
being
able to go out to the parade.
Can you imagine Connor in an empty arena raising the cup to empty stands? The rest of us are like zombies outside wanting to clamor out into the streets.
Oh, man. I actually can't imagine that. I don't know what that's going to be like. I'm so excited for that, though, that this looks like it's going to be a thing.
So is it safe to say that you're in the boat where you are just stoked for hockey to be back? Or are you worried that maybe like the playoffs won't have the same buzz or excitement that they do in the past?
I mean, a bit of both. I think I'm mostly just excited to see some hockey happen. I think like everyone, I'm just confused at what's going on too. Like I can't even picture what this is going to be like in the middle of August, like sitting in, you know, my basement, or actually I'm trying to figure out how I can get my TV on my deck, you know, and like, it's going to be a totally bizarre thing, but you know, I'm excited to see it happening.
Especially as Oilers fans, because we're not used to hockey after say April 10th. Right?
Oh, I don't know
how to watch hockey in the warmth. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, it is totally weird. Like the playoffs a few years ago, I got to go to one of the games, and I remember leaving and it being sunny out and, you know, wearing shorts. It was just the most bizarre thing. Like in my adult life, that's the only playoffs we've had. So it's different.
Just going back to like, you know, being an Oilers fan and things like that, you mentioned, you know, your family was big into music when you were growing up. Were the Oilers and were sports a big part of your life growing up? Was it a big part of your family, or is it something that maybe you just kind of developed an interest in on your own?
It was me developing an interest on my own. I became an Oilers fan kind of later in my teens. Like, I think it was really during the lockout year that I kind of really became a big hockey fan. Like, it's when I turned 18, so I could start going to bars to watch games with my friends. And I remember going to the old brew house on 156 when it was still there, because that's pretty close to where I live. And there was like a jersey place next door that had the Pronger jersey up, and you know, like that sort of era I remember is when I got into it, which of course was like the best and worst time to become an Oilers fan.
Yeah.
Right before that big run, and then you know, the decade plus that followed.
Oh, there's never been a bad year to be an Oilers fan. We had a lot of great hockey in the
town. Oh yeah. No, it's
well, no one can question your loyalty if you started becoming a fan on the 06 run and then kept being a fan after that for
no
13
kidding.
Years.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting time. I laugh too, because you guys probably have the same thing. Like, do you ever get these Facebook you know, reminders, and you see the stuff you were posting, and it's like, I saw one the other day where I was posting about, like, do you remember the Hope line?
Yeah.
Or whatever, like Hall Omark, Pjärvi, and Eberle. And then, like, there's another one that popped up recently where I was talking about, I forget who was all there, but I think it was also, like, Omark and Schultz. And, you know, and it was like, oh, this is going to be the number one power play for the next 10 years. And all these, you know, hilarious things that pop up. And you just look back and you're like, oh, man, like, yeah, I was up till 1 a.m. to find out if we were going to get Heatley, or like all these crazy memories that pop up, and you're just like, oh, right, that one.
But it's going to make it so sweet when the Oilers win in 2020 and we can't go cheer for Connor. It'll be amazing. It'll be worth it, sort of-ish.
Do you really think they're going to be able to stop people from pouring into the streets if that happens?
There's
I would
no
like
way.
To quarantine in, and I'm planning on getting a costume that looks like an empty Rogers Place seat, and they're going to have to find me every game.
You're right.
If they
though,
win,
like,
though, I might. If they win, I might consider just going full Daft Punk, getting myself a helmet, and just hitting the streets anyway. Do you know what I mean?
I'm talking about, we need Daft Punk helmet.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you'll have a hard time stopping like the diehard Oilers fans from partying on White Ave. Like COVID be damned. Like some of these people would be like, I'll get a potentially deadly virus if it means I can celebrate the only Oilers Stanley Cup I've seen in my life.
The animal will come out of the cage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll order a hazmat suit online, usually reserved for nuclear fallout, and I'll go party. I'll go into the arena.
You can just agree to shut the whole city down for 2 weeks after, so everyone can just do it, and then we'll just shut down, have a quarantine.
I would do that.
Yeah, no one interrupt. I like it.
Are other guys in the band big Oilers fans as well, or is it just kind of you?
Our singer Dan is an Oilers fan too. The other guys aren't. They're more fair weather fans, but Dan and I watch a lot of games together.
So, are you guys able to keep up with the team when you're on the road, or is it kind of just in passing? You check out box scores and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've always got like the score app and telling me whatever's going on, but it depends where you are. Like, if you're in North America, you can try to keep track and, you know, watch as much as you can. When you're in Europe, it's totally weird because it'll be 4 a.m. on a bus and then puck is dropping and it's too hard to try to watch. You just kind of, you know, wake up, glance over at the score, and then that's that.
Yeah, no kidding. But before we start to wrap things up here, I'll pass it around quickly one more time. If anyone has any other areas they want to touch on here with Chris before I get to my last few questions, Bag Milk, Jay,
sure.
Wanye.
Yeah, I do, because I posted this on the site today. I know the video came out in April, but Born to Lose, I noticed a very familiar t-shirt that you were wearing, my friend. I want to know how you ended up in a Real Steel t-shirt in your own music video.
Sure. That was just me being a fan. Like, I ordered that shirt right around Christmas. We went and did this festival that's on a cruise ship called 70,000 Tons of Metal that goes from Florida to Mexico and back, and it's just like 70 bands playing like almost 24 hours a day, and I was trying to find a new stage shirt. And then when that one, I don't remember when you guys put that out, if it was right after the 4-goal game or if it was later or when it was, but I always kind of had my eye on it, and I was like, that would look really good on stage. So then I just ordered it, bought it, and ended up getting the nude shirt at the same time. And then that's then it was too small, so I DM'd you guys, got a hold of
How on brand.
Yeah, very on brand. Wrong size shirt.
Okay, wait, you said
that was more me.
Too cute and little?
Yeah.
You said you played a cruise ship that was all about metal music?
It's a festival called 70,000 Tons of Metal. And it's just this huge cruise ship that holds like 6,000 people. And I think about, you know, 2,000 of it is like crew and bands and all that. And then there's, you know, 4,000 fans that basically fly out. I think there was 90 different countries that people had come from. Which is hilarious when you think about, like, the last thing I did before COVID was go on a cruise ship with people from 90 different countries and all this stuff. But yeah, and then they've got like 5 stages. Bands start at 10 in the morning, and I think we finished off the first night, and our set started at like 5 on the pool deck stage outside. The sun was coming up as we finished. It's just crazy.
Even as
what a
just
cool
like
memory.
I was gonna say, even as a fan of like the genre and of the music, that must have just been like a wild experience.
It was. It's totally crazy. Like you have no concept of time or anything going on, just because there's constant bands going the whole time. It was awesome.
What, man, I just like, I can't help but think of what a weekend or week, what that looks like, where you're just doing metal all day, every day, getting in the pit, doing the circles, all that stuff. Is that happening on the cruise ship? Is it like a normal metal experience when you're on there? Are people a little bit more reserved because you're also on a boat?
No, it's totally like that. Like I mean, not for me, because I also had to perform, and I do take that part seriously. So I had to, you know, try to actually get my rest and everything, but it was nuts. Like, people would go crazy. I felt so bad for anyone who worked on that boat, like watching the guy trying to control the people in the hot tub. There's like hot tubs on the deck, and people can watch bands. And of course, they've got, you know, pitchers of beer. There's way too many people, and there's actually the guy who has to be like, "Hey, don't stand." You know, and they're swearing at him, and I'm just like,
why is my 8:30 a.m. mosh pit?
I feel so
every
bad.
Every room's
for
equipped with a dialysis and IV just to keep the good times going.
Yeah, basically.
Was it hard to sleep at night? Like, was it like you could just keep hearing the music pounding 24 hours a day?
Yeah, you could hear it pretty good. Well, that, and it was it was pretty stormy on the way back. Like, going to Mexico was fine. I've never been on a boat, so I found out that I don't like boats on this trip. But like coming back, it was like, you know, for me anyways, like pretty big waves, and it was just like rocking back and forth, and coat hangers in the closet slamming into one side and then the other over and over.
And they were still doing shows?
Yeah, there was a couple. Like they kept lowering they'd have to like kick everyone off the deck and then like slightly bring down the like scaffolding and everything surrounding the stage to like a safer height. And then I remember talking to one of the crew guys, and the captain would basically like go the wrong way and go into the wind so it'd be calmer during sets. And then as soon as the set was over, that's when he'd haul ass to make up time going the right direction, which is why I guess it was so bumpy, is because he was trying to like keep it smooth during the shows. And then they'd rip, you know, through the storm in between kind of thing. It was crazy.
When you're playing sets like that in inclement weather, does it fuck with your ability to play?
You know what? Once we started playing, you don't notice it. You kind of get into this zone where the world doesn't really exist around you. So I didn't notice it there. I noticed it up until the moment we played, and as soon as we started tearing down. But once the show starts, you're in a different mind frame.
You mentioned getting into that zone before a show. Is there like, are you superstitious? Is there like a checklist of shit you go through before a show to like get yourself prepared?
Yeah, there is a little bit. Like I'm a bit of a perfectionist as far as just making sure, like I never worry about like missing notes, or I don't have stage fright or anything, but I always fear equipment failure. Just because it happens to everybody. So I mean, I've got like my checklist of just making sure everything's working. I've got backup everything. I've got a million guitar picks on my amp in my pockets, you know, all over, because I will drop it and all that kind of stuff. But otherwise, no. I mean, really, we'll do some stretching. Everyone starts, you know, doing push-ups, jumping jacks, get the blood going, and then we run out there.
So like a string snapping during a guitar solo is the absolute worst case scenario.
No, that doesn't bother me, because I'll always have backup guitars like within, you know, relatives' arm's reach. It's more like, you know, everything works in sound check, and then you go to play the first note and there's no sound, and you have to find out like, oh shit, where's this problem? You're checking your chords, your wireless, your amp, all this different stuff, and that's kind of the worst. Or sometimes like our drummer will have intros and things that go, you know, we'll play like audio through whatever, like it's whatever intro music we'd use. And sometimes we've got like little cues, like it'll count into a song in our ear monitors. And every now and then a sound guy will mess up and put something in there through the front of house. So like, you know, you'll be on stage and all of a sudden you'll hear this like 1, 2, 3, 4. And you're like, wait, that's the main speakers.
Shit.
You know, right as the song starts, you try to sort through this. Those are the kind of things you worry about, but not so much like the broken strings.
Do you guys have anything like super dope on your rider these days?
Oh man, it changes through the tour. You kind of have to see, like, it's nothing that's too crazy. Like we've put on, it's always just, you know, how many beers are they going to give us? And if we put on this type of liquor, do you think they'll actually get us that? Like that's kind of the wildest that it gets.
Now that you have a Juno, you can command Ciroc in 30 nations on Earth.
I hope so.
Everywhere you go.
I'd love to see just a giant life-size bowl of only blue and orange M&Ms. That's the only thing you guys are getting back there. I love that. Right. Got somebody picking them out their other one.
Speaking of beer, I believe you got a chance to try out our Nation beer product. What'd you think?
Delicious. We got through it a little faster than we probably should have.
It's crushable.
It is.
Yeah, no, they're great. I tried it once before, but it was extra sweet in the celebration yesterday.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You drank Nation beer celebrating a Juno?
We did.
We're going to win the cup in 2020.
That's the good omen we needed.
The stars are aligning.
Got through the whole flat and then switched to margaritas. And then the next thing, we were in a field seeing who can throw the farthest for a while, doing, you know, some good good old-fashioned guy stuff.
The last one here, like, we're a podcast that, or the last one for me, I guess. I don't know if anyone else has any other closing remarks, but we're a podcast that loves to talk about Edmonton and how much, you know, how great the city is. For you guys, you know, you tour around Europe, around North America. How much does it mean to you when you get to play a show in Edmonton and kind of, you know, put something on for the city that you're from, your hometown?
I've always been a really kind of, patriotic Edmonton guy. I don't know if it's like, I think a part of it actually is Ryan Smith. I don't know if you guys had that same thing, but seeing how much he loved the city, like, inspired me to want to be, you know, an Edmontonian who tells everyone how great Edmonton is. So it's always special to play here.
Ryan Smith was why we started Oilers Nation originally. We were so mad he got traded, we made a protest website. And we basically
Remember that.
You do?
I do.
That's unbelievable. We were so pissed, and we were like, we have to do something. And I'm like, we could start a website. I mean, it's 2008. That seemed to be the move, right? Pre-social media. And then we started writing every day. And I don't even know what we were writing about, Jay. Like, bring back Ryan Smith. And then the next day, bring back Ryan Smith.
Yeah, that's awesome. But yeah, I think that was a huge part of it. It's just the passion that guy had for the city. I think it was inspiring. Just it made you fall in love with Edmonton.
So as a successful person who's seen the world, maybe just hit us with some why you love Edmonton story. Like, what do you love about it here? You could be anywhere.
Yeah, but I mean, there's something about the people. Like, it's a great place. It's beautiful. Like, you know, you go other places and it's exciting, but the more you go there, I find the more you miss home. Like, Edmonton's just a special place. It's like in between, you know, small town and big city. Like, you go to New York, we're not like that. It's, you know, there's that sort of like small, you know, Saskatoon-y kind of like small town vibe. But for a city with a million people, I find you don't get it everywhere. Like, it's got a small community feel for a big city.
Plus, we know where all the good bottle depots are because it's home.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You move away, it'll take you a week to figure out where the best bottle depot is. That's why I don't leave. I can't do that research.
Are you a Donair fan?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? For the longest time, I don't think I ate a Donair sober till I was like 30.
Respect.
That's the way it should be.
I got into them more in Europe. I don't know if you guys have been over there, and there's all these, they call them donor kebabs.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing, and there's just like stands all over the place, and my singer, you know, eats them like crazy, so I started getting into them on the last few tours, and now I've become more of a Donair guy.
That's one of the things that makes me love. Edmonton. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
What's your shop in Edmonton?
You know what? I think more like I haven't eaten a ton of Donairs here. Most of them have been at is it Queen Donair on Jasper?
Yeah.
That's where they've mostly been on, you know, the walk home from somewhere, and that's the part I remember.
It's a vacuum. It sucks you in at 2 a.m.
It does.
You walk out and you don't even know where you don't have a plan to go anywhere, and you just blink and you're in Queen Donair.
Yep.
Honestly, I think some Edmonton love and Donair talk is a good spot to end this off on. Chris, thanks for giving us some time. Congratulations on the Juno again. We look forward to seeing what comes next from Stryker.
Yeah, guys, thank you so much. It's awesome to be here.
Go Oilers.
Go Oilers.
Yeah. Thanks for putting Edmonton on the map.
Thanks, man. See you guys.
There you go. That's Chris Seger from the local band Striker. That was cool. He's a cool guy.
Oh, it's funny listening to him talk. I would never guess how he talks and who he is would be the same. Yeah. I'm always scared of people in metal. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to bite me if I look at them wrong.
Yeah,
I was also just kind of like in the background. So I'm adding in some videos into the article for the podcast today, and I've got one playing in the back. And he just, I had so many nerdy music questions that I wanted to ask, but I didn't want to fanboy too much. But like,
why?
This guy,
you should have.
What? Like, man, this guy fucking wails. To watch him play is ridiculous.
You got a fanboy, buddy. What's the point of the podcast if you don't fanboy? Well, it's called fanboy.
Man. Yeah, I told Brett Kissel last week I loved him.
Wanya, did you catch any of our Kissel interview? Did you know he did the whole thing shirtless?
Yeah, I did. I listened. It was really good.
Not gonna lie, a little upset that Chris didn't do the whole interview shirtless as well. I thought maybe we'd turn that into a trend.
I got a lot. Pop my tarp off.
I got a bunch of people on social lipping me off because they're like, "Ah, did you not go on the podcast? Because it's Jordan Eberle's real best friend and you're his fake best friend and you're a fucking loser." And I'm like, "Shut up, internet!" And I'm going to listen to this podcast. And I listen. I'm like, "Yeah, Brett Kissel's probably a better choice for best friend than me." Well done, Jordan.
Only one of you performed at his wedding.
Well, between the two of us, me and Brett Kissel, there's like we've got numerous albums.
But I would also. I would say there's an argument to be had who Jordan Eberle's mom likes more.
Guaranteed she likes me more. I guarantee it. If you put me beside Brett Kissel and I reminded her who I was, because I'd have to, she would at least remember me.
That's what we're talking about.
As long as you believe that.
Impact. I have a business card.
Her I business saw the card, game. Wanya laid some serious game.
Mrs. Eberle's business card is tucked in like my forever thing that you have where you put all your memorabilia from life. It is in there with my Jordan Eberle card.
Fair enough. Okay, yeah, before we wrap up the pod, Jay, do we have an update from Oodle Noodle?
We always have an update from Oodle Noodle.
What's the charity?
We dropped off. We just dropped off food to Hope Mission. So we dropped off 200 pounds of food there today, which was great. And this week we are working with the Edmonton Down Syndrome Society. So Bag Milk put the video up on Nation ON yesterday, so you can see what they're all about. We're helping them restock their playroom. So when COVID hits for a lot of these charities, they have to throw out a lot of their stuff for safety reasons. Mm-hmm. And they need help to kind of restock all that. So we're the 10% of our in-store sales this week are going to help them buy toys for their playroom when they can open back up. So super cool.
I was looking at Instagram, Jay, and saw the video on Oodle Noodle Gram of you sitting in the tiny chair.
Yeah.
And I like couldn't figure out what the fuck was going on. Like, do they know the sound on? I'm like, why is he sitting in such a small chair? I don't understand. Who are those guys?
That was the Edmonton Down Syndrome Society. And today, did something get posted today about me in a small chair?
No, it was yesterday, I think.
Oh, because the small chair gang struck again today. We shot another video today with next week's charity partner, and we sat in small chairs. So there's a theme going on.
I was like, either Jay is 29 feet tall, or he's sitting in a comically like, undersized chair for some reason.
Yeah.
Again, before we go, need to give some love to the fine folks at Japa Machinery as well. Check them out, japamachinery.com, or give them a call. Love this, 780-962-5272. And again, another big shout out to Chris Seger. He already texted me saying he had a great time and he enjoyed hopping on the pod. Chris, we enjoyed having you on the pod, and we'd love to do it again. Thanks to everyone.
Now, before you wrap up here, M-Check, I know you have all your momentum, but don't think I didn't notice you said a swear word. You said shit to the guy from Striker. That was baldy.
I also dropped an F-bomb.
Yeah, we're making you into a non-radio man by the
moment. Oh, yeah, we're breaking him down.
I had someone text into the radio show. It actually happens not like every day, but once in a while, people will text in and be like, oh, you're M-Check, love you on the Oilers Nation radio podcast. And then one time a guy was like, you guys need to stop swearing so much. I'm trying to listen with my kids, and you're always swearing. Yeah. And I told him, I said, hey, man, I tell those guys every week, stop swearing, but they don't listen to me. So I totally put the blame on you guys.
It shocked me when you swore a little bit because you're better than all of us in media stuff. But when you said shit, I was like, oh, my, look who's becoming one of us.
And someone else texted in and they said, Yaremchuk, how do you go? Because I swear a bit on Oilers Nation Radio as well, but they're like, how do you go from swearing on the podcast and never swearing on the radio? And it's honestly
you're a pro. It's a switch.
It's not even like a thing where I'm like, okay, don't swear. Like, I've never had to tell myself don't swear on the air. And it's actually been harder for me to like start swearing on this podcast than it is to like not swear on the radio.
Jay swears most of the swears, but he doesn't swear in anger. He swears as a bridge in his sentences.
Yeah.
I don't find that offensive.
I am not offended that you're not offended.
I would also be in the 4 a.m. mosh pit hot tub on a metal cruise.
That sounds so much fun. All I can think about is, man, I want to go to a metal cruise. Although, the idea of being on a cruise ship is scary right now, but, like, still, that would be so much fucking fun.
Maybe that's how we solve the our problem for a playoff party. Get a group of, like, 5,000 Oilers fans, get them to quarantine so that we know no one has COVID, and then just shove them on a boat and we'll watch playoff games on a boat for 2 months.
Ooh. So basically, you'd need to
down the North Saskatchewan?
Yeah.
On the riverboat?
All right, so now do I have permission to do my wrap-up?
I suppose. I mean, I felt like we just hit a wall there. It's probably a good time to wrap up.
Yeah, it probably is. Big shout-out to the folks at Jabba. Big shout-out to Chris Seger. Check out the band, Stryker. We'll be tagging them in all our social media as well. So follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Real Life Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Jay, Bagged Milk, Wanye, thanks for giving me an hour and a bit of your time.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good day.
Episode 193 of the Real Life Podcast is over.
Great job on making it through the entire hour of the Real Life Podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.